Hello and welcome. And we're here at Holistic Investments. I'm your host, Constantine Kogan. And we're here today with an amazing guest, Justin Rizvani, who's the first generation American entrepreneur, author, and speaker based in Austin. And he's in 2017 became Forbes 30 under 30 and received letter of accommodations from the California State Legislature for his marketing work at age 23. He's a founder of Zion, an open global decentralized community platform that facilitates transparent and direct flow of content and payments. Zion is a Web5 app and is built on Lightning Network. So we're going to talk a lot about this part. So just really pleasure to have you here, Justin. Hi.
Thank you, brother. Lots of gratitude to be here and have this discussion with you.
Likewise. So just as a traditional, you know, like disclaimer, so this content is for informational purposes only, should not construe any such information or other material as legal, tax, investment, or financial or any other advice. Now we can talk literally about anything, right? So obviously the first question people might be asking, like, okay, so Zion is a Web5 platform. So how did we skip the Web4 component?
It's a good question. I think that the concept of Web 5 was really around distinguishing this technical pattern from Web 3, distinguishing the concept of blockchains and tokens and really building a separation. And it's a marketing function. It doesn't really, I think, more than a marketing function to distinguish. And there's a bit of interesting things that if you like add the best things of Web 2 and add the best things of Web 3, 2 + 3 = 5, and that's the concept of Web 5, I guess. But a lot of this is not like Zion didn't come up with this term. This is all from TBD, which is a division of Block. And if you go to their website, they'll give you a description of why they believe this is a Web 5 protocol and why we're approaching our technology on this Web 5 stack.
So this is like very curious, right? So I think with a lot of buzz, you know, like around like, you know, FTX, you know, Binance stories, like, you know, the Voyager, Celsius of the world, like people are missing out like a lot of really important innovations that are coming on Lightning Network, which is, you know, Bitcoin Lightning Network is the core of how it all started, right? So you as a person who consciously decided to focus on this particular angle, like, so can, first of all, can you share with us like why was that the choice?
So if you know a little bit of, just a little bit about my background, so circa 2014, 2013, I built the first app on the App Store that connected an influential person on Instagram to a brand through a mobile app. So early on in my career, I wanted to support the most influential creators on the internet to build a better advertising experience with brands and their audiences. So I've always had this concept of value transfer for creators. How do you build a more effective transfer of value? And so built that company, sold that company in 2016, left the board in 2018, and then in 2020, I started Zion. So the lens I've always had is that the ultimate arbiter is value exchange. So me transferring value to you. And if I wanted to do and build a system that transferred value, I said, well, what is the most immutable decentralized money out there? What is something that where I don't have to invent value? I don't have to make up something. Let me just use Bitcoin. Bitcoin Core is very secure, but it's also very slow. So what's the fastest way to move money on the web? The Lightning Network. It became the solution that said, okay, if I'm trying to transfer value between fans and creators, the Lightning Network is actually the most efficient way to do that because it allows you to move value at the speed of light instantly and allowing for instant settlement. So that was the reason why we chose it. It was a very simple decision. It's like, this is value. This is money on the internet, native money on the internet, transferring between two people. Use the Lightning Network. Because in my opinion, everything else kind of revolves around some pseudo security. Maybe it's not money, maybe it is. And I just didn't want to focus on nonsense. It was all for me, signal, no noise.
So, and it's interesting. So the company you referred to, like, you know, it was the Amplify, which, you know, you sold to Brandtech Group, as I remember, like, and you made it like in 2 years, like 8-digit numbers, like very profitable, right?
Big business.
Yes.
And very big business, there, yeah.
Now, you, I'm sure as a successful entrepreneur, like, you also did your analysis, like, not from a technical standpoint of view, but also from scalability, as you mentioned. So it's fast. The Lightning Network provides you this opportunity. But at a time, ironically, it was not that fast. So I want you to also maybe help us to understand, like, you know, for people who are not that technical, right? What are the top three value propositions of Lightning Network that actually they excite you personally?
So peer-to-peer value transfer at the speed of light. And I think what's really interesting is the interoperability of Lightning across some of the largest corporations in the world. So Lightning allows us to do cross-border payments instantly, allows for instant remittance, allows for instant value transfer. So Lightning is just a more efficient way to move money on the internet. It's native money to the internet. That's what's really exciting to me, is like, we finally have internet money, magic internet money per se. And there isn't a state actor that can be involved to influence Bitcoin. I think what we've seen with Ethereum, particularly on what's basically on this OFAC compliance of proof of stake, is now it's a state-run system in some aspects. And Bitcoin is true censorship-resistant money because of the decentralized nature of it. Also, it's really about the security mechanism of Bitcoin that it has a fixed supply. You know, this fixed supply of 21 million is a really interesting property that allows us to really understand that there is a way to transfer value over the web. And I think what people don't understand about Lightning is, I believe Lightning, if you look at like the you look at the OSI stack, right, when you have like application, presentation, session, transport, network, data, and the physical layer of the internet, the Lightning Network is almost as important as TCP/IP, how packets move across the web. But that packet layer is now a packet layer on top of money. And I think that's very interesting, and it unpacks a lot of interesting things for us as communities and creators, because what we're always trying to do is bridge the gap between creators and fans, right? Facebook did it, but they arbitrage it through advertising. Twitter's trying to do it a little bit, but arbitrage it through advertising. The question was, can you build a model where there's a true value-to-value transfer between creators and fans? And I think we found it with Bitcoin and Lightning.
Yeah, that's a very, very beautiful way to look at it. Like, you know, so, and you know, I as a like author, I know you have a book, which is Unapologetic Freedom, was the number one bestseller in politics and, you know, and social science. And then you were writing a lot of articles, you know, like about digital sovereignty, like Bitcoin and censorship. So censorship by itself is a huge topic, right? And
sure.
Unfortunately, I feel like we're still in a very like early stages where a lot of people are coming into crypto, not because they actually care about like, you know, the censorship, but just because they want to speculate, you know, as a first entrance. And then they discover like only later that, oh my God, this is also such an important technology. Such, you know, it actually it protects you, it provides you, you know, the ability to control your money. So if you were to explain it also in layman terms, like how does like, you know, the Bitcoin censorship work in the Lightning Network? Like how does it protect you as opposed to, let's say, Web 2 or Web 3 stack?
Well, I think number one is that if you become a node on the network, there isn't a way for your node to be blocked out in terms of this open monetary system, right? Because one of the most things that are attracted to me about Bitcoin is it was open source. It allowed for permissionless innovation. You know, really who has ownership is you as a creator. And it's very different because you can actually own that transaction. So I think those are the elements that Bitcoin is very attractive to me. I mean, we saw the impact of like what happened with Tornado Cash and how like basically at the whim of a stroke, an entire company can be wiped off the face of the earth and an open source developer is now in prison. So I think mm-hmm. those elements are very important when we think about censorship resistant money in particular. And I think that when we look at Bitcoin has the highest user base. So if we look at all the cryptocurrencies, which has the highest user base, which has the highest network effect? And Bitcoin definitely has the highest impact network effect. It has, if you look at, it's the most owned cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. So it was very obvious to me when I was building like a social product, why not target the largest available audience, which is people that own Bitcoin? And that was just made a lot of sense to me that would be the product that we want to bring to market. And there's a lot of apps that are interoperable with it, right? So you see Cash App, 70 million users in the US, and they have Lightning in native into their Bitcoin wallet. And that means there's 70 million users that I have a potential to attract to Zion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely huge. And just to maybe to remind for our listeners who are like, you know, so that there's 106 million Bitcoin owners as of to date of this recording. So we're recording in December 2022, right? And it's like, it's a lot. And then daily Bitcoin users, like we're more than 400,000 Bitcoin, there's more than 200 million Bitcoin wallets. And so if we're talking about like just speculators or traders, like there's more than 50 million of those. And then that we have 270,000 Bitcoin transactions on a daily basis, right? So, and it's still very early, right? Which is really interesting. So we're going to 2024, where we're expecting the halving, right? You know, so there'll be another important event. Obviously, we can talk about it a little bit in the future, right? So now we're in a building phase, right? So you are building an amazing application, right? So if people still haven't used Zion, you know, you can just go download it right now, and you know, you have an application, right? You have an opportunity to already even, you know, chat and transact, right? To pay anyone instantly and on a Lightning network. So what are, like, if we talk a little bit about Zion, so let's segue on this topic. What is Zion, and like, what's the value proposition for a person who's downloading your app?
Yeah, so I think the biggest focus is my entire career has been around supporting creators. And so if we look at the general web, I think that there's three things that are broken on the web. Number one, I believe identity is highly bifurcated and broken. I think that the way messages and data is stored is extremely broken. And I think the money is broken. I think those are three main very big problems. And if we could solve some of those issues, we can build almost any application in the world, and we can basically change the system that we're currently in. So how are we solving each of those problems? So number one is, when you join Zion, you're not necessarily creating an account on our database. We're assigning you a DID. A DID is a decentralized identifier, and the W3C Foundation, the Web3 Consortium, has added a DID as an identity layer for the web. So when you create an account, we give you a DID, and then we give you a 12-word seed phrase to hold that as the private key and encrypts that. And you are the only one in the world that has access to that. Then we take that DID and store it onto Bitcoin Core using an implementation called DidIon. DidIon anchors your identity to the most immutable blockchain ever created, Bitcoin Core. Why is that? Well, you need to have a registrar to have these DIDs in one place that can never be state attacked. And basically, the Bitcoin blockchain doesn't have the ability to have a state attack. We saw that with Bitcoin leaving China, is that this is censorship resistant at the state level. And that's why Bitcoin is so important and so core. Mm-hmm. So we take your identity, anchor it to Bitcoin Core. Then how do you solve the messaging and data problem after using DIDs? Well, there's an implementation, the Web5 implementation from Block, called decentralized web nodes. And these are data storage and messaging relay mechanisms that entities can use to locate public or private permission data related to a given decentralized identifier, related to a DID. And think of decentralized web nodes as like a mesh-like data store constructed to enable an entity to operate in multiple instances that sync at the same time with the same state across many different applications. So think about this as an interoperable data store that any application in the world can use. And the final piece is Lightning, which is the payments. And basically every object in the Zion network is a payment object. So imagine Instagram, but every piece of every content, every reply, everything is actually somewhere where you can give a transaction. So what's very interesting about our approach is that we're not trying to go build another blockchain. We're not trying to build another token. We're building on top of these interoperable open source and open state frameworks that allow for interoperability across the entire web. Imagine if you can message someone from your Airbnb to your Spotify to your Twitter account all simultaneously through one messaging relay system. That's what the hopes of DWNs are, is that why do you have to have a new state for every application every time you build something, where DWNs allow for this massive data store and interoperability? So what's really, really, really core to what Zion is trying to do is that our innovation is to be interoperable. We want to be the first interoperable social network that's not building another walled garden. If you look at everybody else, a lot of the proxies are built in these very particular walled gardens. But, you know, social networking, for example, is only like 1% of the app store. There's gaming, there's all these other things. What if you can build an interoperable app store? And I think that's the hope of DWNs, DIDs, and why we approach this technical pattern in the first place.
So this is much more than just like a social media or a messenger or an ability to pay. Because, you know, if you think about it, like right now, a lot of people still use the Web2 stack, right? Which is, you know, Facebook, Twitter, like WhatsApp, right? And you know, and even in Facebook, there is an ability to pay someone, right? In fiat, and it's easy seamlessly. But ironically, People like for there's a reason why people are not actually using it very actively, right? You know, so it's not native for them, like, you know, in their psyche, something like blocks them or prevents them. So if you were to compare like something that would be more relatable to people, like, you know, and the main differences, obviously you explain the component of interpretability, you explain the fact that, you know, it's censorship resistant, and then the fact that, you know, like you will have the way that, like, to control your data, actually control it, and not just like talk about it, but where privacy actually matters, right? You know, that's something like, you know, that is already huge by itself. But let's be honest, unfortunately, right now we live in a world where like people don't, like, on a massive scale, people don't feel this problem right now. They're starting to hear, like, when people were deplatformed from the top social media, it's becoming now a big prevalent problem. But, and then we have a figure like Elon Musk who's come and say, oh, well, I'm going to fix all of this, right? You know, and some people are like, oh yeah, great. And others like skeptical, because we talked about a little bit of before the recording that, like, you know, it's a very different skill to fix the social engineering aspect and to build rockets or electric cars, right? So I want to ask you more a question, like, if we can speculate a bit and go through a few years further, right? You know, maybe 3 to 5 years, right? When Zion is going to become multi-million platform, right? You know, so how do you see will be like, what do you see will be the main differences from the stack that people are using right now, is Twitter or Facebook?
Yeah, I think, first of all, fundamentally, I don't believe any core company should have the ability to delete content on the internet. Right, like I fundamentally believe that. Mm-hmm. So the question comes to my mind is, how do you build a system that there isn't even control at the layer of the company building a protocol? As like me as an individual should not have the rights based upon how I feel or the days that I'm getting up, who can actually remove content from the web? So this is why, like, I'm trying to build systems that allow for ownership of the content and the distribution of that content to be relied on the creators themselves. That's why, like, for example, when you create an account on Zion, there is no possibility for me to ever delete a DID, because you would have to go and reverse a transaction on Bitcoin. That's never happened, right? You have the 51% attack to delete something from the blockchain. So how do you build a network that truly is censorship resistant at the base layer? And that's really what I'm trying to build. I mean, that's my core of saying, like, we shouldn't have the rights to remove content. It all should be very localized. And what I'm empowering and what you'll see is the client, like, because Zion is a protocol and a client, is that our opinionated client revolves around communities. So a creator develops a DID, then they develop a community around a DWN, and then they have full authority around their community. So do they want to remove content from their community? They have full rights to do that, but not at the layer of the protocol, which is Zion. We don't want to have any responsibility of doing those types of things. So I think that's the inherent difference, is like, how do you build a system that allows for that at scale?
But with this, you see, the benefit of this, like, correct, you're building a system. First of all, there cannot be bots, right, ever on this system, right? So that's not, this is also—
And I think when you commingle money, you can actually prevent the bot. And I just wrote a blog post on this the other day, mm-hmm. is like, how do you integrate payments to remove bots? And that's a big staking feature that we built out, is like, that's cool. A bot can go and create an account on Zion, but you need to fund it with a Lightning transaction. And we stake every comment that you make. So basically, is a bot going to lose money every time it posts? No. So bots are just going to say, we're not going to try to play on Zion because it costs us too much money. Because bots only work because they're free.
So, and this is, so this is amazing. Like, you know, the fact that you have this capability. On the same time, I want to play a little bit of devil advocates, right? You know, of the challenging part of this, right? So imagine someone who's also openly can go and purchase Bitcoin or participate in your network, right? And someone pretty known and wealthy. I mean, just for the sake of example, imagine Kanye West right now would be part of Zion, right? And he start posting some really offensive content, right? I don't want to even repeat what he posted lately. We all know about it. Like, it was very anti-Semitic and they're like problematic content, which, let's put it this way, it requires some kind of curation. Now, I'm sure you thought about this problem like deeply. So I want to hear more, like, you know, so that you could help users to understand, like, you know, what, you know, how can we deal with content that is deeply offensive?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a very good question. And what I want to make sure I distinguish is Zion the protocol and Zion the opinionated client. Mm-hmm. So the whole premise is that the protocol will not allow for me as a CEO, if Kanye has his own DID, he has his own decentralized web node, mm-hmm. people are connecting to that DWN on their own clients. It's not the Zion client. And what I mean by the Zion client is the Zion app. Then we can't delete his content on his own DWN, just like I can't go to his phone and delete his photos. I can't delete phone numbers. I can't delete his own private text messages. But as an opinionated client, which Zion, there's a distinction. We have an opinionated client that is on an app store. We can decide as an aggregator what information we display within our aggregator. And for some reason, maybe Zion, you know what? This type of content we don't want to display on our aggregator does not mean we delete the comment. This is very important, is that mm-hmm. we don't have the ability to delete or remove someone. We just remove it from being displayed within our system. And there's a difference, because if someone wants to go fetch that data and permission it from another client, they have the ability. It's the interoperability of data fetch, right? It's this concept of open source and open state. How do you build a social network with an open state? Right now, even if you wanted to access things on Twitter, there's no open state API that says, you know what? I want to go and see that content anyway. There isn't an ability to do that. We want to open up the possibility that there is another way. There is another opinionated way, just like email. Just like I think the inherent thing to understand here is we're trying to build a system that is as interoperable as email. And email is built upon this concept of SMTP. It's a protocol. Mm-hmm. Most people don't understand that when you do at something, that's a protocol that was built out in the 90s or 80s or whatever. And now everyone uses an email server and they use SMTP, blah, blah, blah. Like, we think that this is as akin and as important to the interoperability of apps. Because we skipped this concept of protocol when we started building app building, and everything was in the silo. And it was highly inefficient. I think, like, having all these logins, right? Like, it's super inefficient. And, like, you know, one of the visions we have, and this is my very core mission, and I would say, like, if I'm successful in 5 years, is that Zion is the last platform a creator ever has to build on. The reason is that imagine you could build a social network that you can take your fans with you everywhere that you go. Right now, not possible on YouTube, not possible on Instagram, not possible on Twitter or Facebook. But that's what we want to build, is an interoperable network that you can take your fans with you forever.
So this is a really interesting, addition to what you were talking about before. So how would that actually work? Let's imagine in 5 years, when Zion is super popular and successful. So let's imagine I have 100,000 followers in Zion, right? Let's assume there is another popular network, which can be also decentralized.
Another client that uses the same technical pattern. Really important. Yes.
Exactly. So absolutely. Then how would
they maybe display things in a different way?
Exactly. But how would that be technically possible that I can actually port my, I can transfer my user?
Right. Great question. So right now, imagine every user creates a DID. Every piece of content uploaded to Zion is signed cryptographically by your DID. Mm-hmm. All the communities are held on a DWN, and that DWN combines your DID to your DWN. Let's say that you want to leave, and all the connections to that community are DID to DID. Let's say you want to port over and go to this new application. You just say, hey guys, I'm on this new app. This is my DID. I'm right here. All the connections immediately port over, because the connection is not made on the client level. It's made on the protocol level between the DID. It's that open state nature of it. So maybe there's another client that wants to implement permissions in a new way. You just port all your followers over, and all those 100,000 people now come over with you, because you know cryptographically this is that community. That's the problem, is like when you go to a new social network, like, what is the handle? Do we know that this is this person? Do we not know this is person? Mm-hmm. But now, because every piece of content is cryptographically signed by a private key, we can unlock these new possibilities. This doesn't exist in the current state of social media.
I mean, I think it's beautiful, because if I were to translate it maybe in a simplified way also, like, you know, like, instead of like blue check marks that we have right now in Twitter and Instagram, like, you know, the smart contract, the cryptographic proof that you are you as a content creator and your audience is unique, and they don't have to verify that. It's already done. Like, you know, so it's
and
it's
and the margins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't talk about this yet, but the way we do that in this world is called a verifiable credential. So this is an interoperability badge that can be assigned by Zion, it can be assigned by a DMV, it can be assigned by a service that can verify that this DID is verified by this individual company. And now we know as a stamp, like, here's a VC. We can also KYC you using verifiable credentials. So like the possibility of like login and auth and all these other things that we don't really like take for granted. Like, for example, identity is centralized on Google, right? Like when you sign in with Google, technically you don't own your own identity. Google owns your identity. And if they turn you off at any time, imagine the downstream effects, but now you own your identity for the first time. So it unpacks all these possibilities of verifying an individual or a DID in a completely new way. I'm really fucking excited about this stuff.
And it's amazing. I can feel your energy. That's beautiful. Now, if I would wear a Bitcoin maximalist head when they say like, not your, you know, let's say the very simple things like,
you not know, your keys, not your coin.
Yes. Not your keys, not your coin. Like you have to have a, like, you know, like instead of like hot wallets, you need to have like your own wallets, like, you know, like hardware, et cetera. So for someone who hears like the fact that you can even KYC people, for me, who's like more, I'm more like in the middle. I understand that, you know, somehow we need to interact with, let's say, fiat on ramps, right? Or we need to somehow interact with like the institutes that actually need to know your customer to make sure it's not a politically exposed person, to make sure it's not a person who has like red flags in the past, like did maybe some egregious like crimes, whatever, right? Now, for someone more like maximalist, how would you explain the need of KYC potentially?
I mean, at the end of the day, we have to live in a world that has laws. And I think this concept that you can live in a world with like no laws and it's all freedom is just very unrealistic. Like this society, I mean, this is a problem with some like the libertarian movement is I don't agree with some of the values in there because it's not how the real world works. And we have laws that we have in place. Like I live in the amazing country of the United States of America, and I'm not interested in like being this anarchist that like doesn't want to follow the law. So we have to follow the laws in some aspects. But the beauty is, what are the effects of how KYC works? For an example, one of the technical patterns we are potentially implementing is that in order to KYC a user and give them a verifiable credential, you never log into anything that Zion does. You would log in with your DID, you go log into potentially your bank, then the bank assigns the verifiable credential to the DID without Zion being anywhere near that. So then you take the DID, and this is what's really interesting about DIDs, is then you could take the verifiable credential and update the original DID doc on IPFS and on Bitcoin Core. So now the DID document is built on a blockchain. You can say, oh, then on January 25th, we updated the DID doc with this new verifiable credential that KYCs this individual DID that is this user because of this action. But Zion wasn't involved in that process. You don't pass back a social security number, an ID. The bank does assign the VC. Because at the end of the day, everyone's still using a bank. Like I don't know a single individual that's completely off the grid. So the question is, can you do that with like a zero knowledge proof, which is kind of what a VC does. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the interesting thing that we unlock here is that you don't have to pass back verifiable information to verify an individual.
So essentially also what you're building is like an infrastructure of the future that, you know, the average user would not even know that they use Zion in a way, right? They would not care like what's happening on the back end. They would know that it's an easy user interface. They get the privacy and the control of their data, right? You know, like at the same time, they have the efficiency of transferring wealth or transferring any money like they want, like in a very fast manner, right? You know, so, and that's another thing, like of a lot of criticism that came to Bitcoin that a lot of the people who were, even lately, all the surveys shown that a lot of the people right now are thinking of Bitcoin as a like more of a store of value, right? You know, as a wealth preservation tool, similar to gold, right? Because the implementation of something like Zion was not there yet, and it's probably people just didn't know about it. So now you're introducing this completely new app, right? You know, that provides multiple applications, right? You know, like, and then create communities even that. Now, tell us a little bit about the roadmap. What are we expecting in 2023-24?
Yeah. So early January, the official white paper of Zion and all of our technical documentation gets released. Also early January, the new V2 app atop of that technology will be released as well. From there, we will be launching Open Chat early in the middle of kind of the first quarter. And then we're going to be basically bringing the new version of the app to the world. Beyond that, I'm not really sure exactly where we're going to go. We'll implement verifiable credentials towards the end of the year. But really, really the focus is how to build these primitives of interoperability. But it's really about releasing the app. I mean, we have over 60,000 people on a wait list to get onto Zion V2, which is incredible. So that's kind of a big thing that we really want to support those 60,000 people that were very early on for us.
So when is, do you have any preliminary dates that we can share where you'll be able to download?
Early January. We'll be releasing on test flight. You know, I can actually, if you want to see what we have right now, the V2, it's a little buggy, but as a friend, I'd be happy to share it with you if you want to play around with it. It's a little buggy, but it's cool.
I love buggy things. That's I think it's a privilege to actually test. It's imagine somebody would like give you to test like Facebook or Twitter in the beginning, like, you know, yeah, it would be buggy, but it's impressive, you know, like you have even access to this. So sure.
Yeah, I'd be happy to send it to you, brother. I just be cautious. There's a little bit of bugs running around.
Oh no, for sure. And listen, for someone who builds multiple products, I totally appreciate the fact that, you know, it's work in progress, right? So, okay. So
yeah, it's very hard. It's very hard. I mean, mostly because the stuff I'm talking about has never been done before. Like the DWN spec is still being written. So imagine like we're trying to write capability objects in our schemas for a spec that isn't fully done yet. But the point is that once the spec is done, all the schemas should be able to match interoperably. I mean, that's like the really interesting thing is like, if we were just building this app standalone, it'd be super easy. Here you go, payments, web stack, your own server. But we're trying to build this thing in this whole new technical pattern on top of Lightning, on top of DIDs as a login. It's a really complex innovation per se of engineering.
100%. I'm sure a lot of people who are like less technical, they will take them time to even understand the depth of it, which is another important aspect that sometimes, you know, the technology are not, they're moving so fast that people like, you know, just not coping with the pace, you know, just like you need to have a lot of knowledge to even start understanding the underlying infrastructure, right? And it's totally fine. We're going to have a lot of different level of users. Some people will just download it and use it right immediately. Now, I do want to ask you about like the metaphysical concept of the name, because, you know, I'm not sure. I'm sure there is no coincidence of the name Zion, which is I want to ask you about the fact. How did you come up with the name? Like, was it you, or was you had this epiphany with some of your partners, and what does it mean for you?
So when I started this project on my own, the name was N2N2. So N squared, N squared, mm-hmm. to infinity. And I brought on, you know, we had the MVP launched. I bring on a couple investors, and an investor of mine, Tony Robbins, one of the first checks in the business, was like, Justin, love the idea, but you got to change the name. And I'm like, you got to be something that's more like, I'm like, okay. So basically sent an email to, we had five investors, and I said, hey guys, we got to think of a name. And one of the investors came back to us. She was in a meditation and said, hey, this really came very clearly that the name is Zion. And, you know, as particularly like, you know, we're all fans of the Matrix. Zion is the last city in the Matrix without machines, without mm-hmm. algorithms, without things running the space. They're still machines, but they're not run by AI. We thought it was a very fitting name as this like last place of interoperable, you know, revolution for us as a community. We believe it's like a place to go and like truly be free. It's the last bastion of human sovereignty and freedom. So we felt the name was very like correct for what we were trying to do, but it's very focused on the Matrix reference. I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. The Matrix, the documentary, to be particular, not the movie. The Matrix, the documentary. You're getting that underlying joke.
I watched it. It's amazing. Like, and I don't know if it's valuable for you, but I on a level of etymology, when I, the design means very important word in Hebrew, which is in Aramaic as well. Like the root is like citadel, like castle. Like, so this is like this fortified protection, which has a both spiritual meaning and like, you know, like physical aspect to it. Like, That's beautiful. So you mentioned something interesting. So Tony Robbins was one of your first checks. Any other notable personalities who were partners? Or
I mean, a ton. I mean, Anthony Pompliano, Mark Moss, Robert Breedlove, Aaron Rodgers from the NFL, Aubrey Marcus, Dan Held, Griffin Johnson, our lead investors, XBTO, Kingsway Capital. There's about 30 people on the cap table that are supporting this project. Myself, I'm an investor, obviously. So there's like a lot of great individuals that are involved in this project. Sean Stevenson, really great support investors.
I'm sure it will be fruitful. So you did it in a way like more of an equity deal, or you had also like, you know, some of the opportunities to participate in something additional?
We have no. It's all equity. We have no token. So no token, no nonsense. Like it's all equity based. Mm-hmm. We are like a functioning corporation here in the United States. So those are the elements of how we built the company.
Beautiful. That's good to hear, because, you know, some people are like more moving eventually to DAO. That's why also the nature of the question, like, you know, if you in the future, you would consider something like a governance token in addition. It might not represent equity, but like something that will help people to vote. But again, very different concept.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know too much. I didn't want to overcomplicate what we were trying to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how DAOs technically work at scale. I still think that the best companies in the world are benevolent dictatorships, and so I think there still needs to be someone deciding things to move very quickly. And I don't think there's been a successful example of a DAO ever in the world. So there's been a lot of examples of great companies, but not a successful DAO, I would argue.
Oh, that's for sure. Now, to close also the topic that we started a little bit in the beginning, like, you know, regarding censorships, because, you know, in your book, An Unapologetic Freedom, you basically write a lot about it. So what is your vision, like, you know, what's going to happen in, you know, our world, in our digital world with censorship in the future, let's say in the coming 2 or 3 years?
I think it's going to increase. I think it will dramatically increase. I think that, you know, one example is you just have to look at history of what happens, particularly in high inflationary environments. So if you look at the country of Argentina, they made it illegal to talk about inflation because it was believed that the more you talk about inflation, the more inflation occurs. Mm-hmm. So the concept of censorship was occurring at the base layer of like this thing that's happening, you can't talk about it. And I think that will eventually evolve into centralized systems and the government having impact and saying, you can't talk about this because it impacts this thing on the government. So if there's a system in place where censorship can occur and a voice can be squandered, it will. So how do you build systems that allow for sovereignty and openness in that way? That's kind of the thing that I hope for. But it's predicated on the business models, because, you know, the way that these companies make money is through advertising, and advertising is the core way that they can provide to their shareholders. And I think it was really important when we launched Zion was what is the business model of this company? Because it's like, at the end of the day, it has to self-sustain somehow. Like it's not, you can't just take venture, like a lot of my peers still believe that you can just like take venture capital money forever and just say, oh, this is going to be subsidized by another person, but that doesn't exist. That's not the true reality. Mm-hmm. So I believe that the network needed to be a self-sustaining organism, a self-sustaining network. And that's really what we're hoping for, is that the network itself will become a self-sustaining engine for the world. And that works through native payments, native monetary payments, and creators paying for the DWNs inside the system. And that's what I hope is really our future, is that we have a self-sustaining model that allows cash flow to just return, and the engine just runs itself. That's my hope.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I wish your hope will come true. That's for sure. That's just because
I appreciate that.
I think we miss a lot of those like in applications that are real world and they will actually generate revenue, and not less hopes and more practicality, right? You know, so now on a level, on a personal level, I do want to ask you, like, so this is something that I usually conclude, and I specifically don't notify my guests like what I'm going to ask, because this is important, like, so I want it to be very genuine, right? So I know you also very self-aware person, you're into meditation and a lot of other different practices. So what is the meaning in life to you?
What is the meaning of life?
Yes.
meaning of life? I think the meaning of life is to, at the end of your journey, is to have hopefully found the best version of yourself while contributing to the greater whole. I think one of the other meanings of life is to understand that we are not individuals. We are part of a much larger system. I am you, you are I, we are the same. Everyone listening to this is a part of me in some little capacity. And we are a collective being, we're a collective voice. And to understand by the time you leave this place, there isn't a separation from another individual. We are this core of love in what we are. So that to me is what the meaning of your life is and the ultimate meaning of your death. And I have quite an important relationship with death. As like you'll see if you read my book, you know, the beginning of it is very like kind of core about what I went through. But that to me is what the meaning of life is.
Yes. And I specifically would not disclose, you know, what was your experience. So thank you for sharing. I implore people to buy your book and actually read about it. Right. So I know you talk a little bit about it in different interviews, but I want to keep it like as an intriguing part. And, you know, I really enjoy listening to you because I understand that you really believe it in your heart. Right. You know, it's not like something you're doing it for another business line just because you want to like make billions, is because you really believe in what you're talking about, right? And this is very important. I think this is a new type of entrepreneurship, like this is a new type of like business owners who would care, like sincerely care. And that's what actually got me excited to do this interview with you and to learn from you. I really appreciate what you just shared. I hope we're going to do it more. I will be glad to use a test net and then provide my feedback. And then from there, like once the January launch will happen, like we might do another interview and just go over it, like, you know, to see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what would be fun in January is I'll send you the white paper now so you can see it. It's not out yet. It's not public, but maybe we can unpack that because it's like 55 pages of technical documentation and we can get really nerdy with it if it's something you'd like to do. Because I'm like this like product guy. I like to talk about the marketing and the brand, but also like I like the innovation side. So thank you very much. It's such insightful questions. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much, Justin.